beautiful people. Welcome back to my podcast, Dunya Rising. I'm your host, Dunya, and I'm on a mission to give a platform to voices that aren't given enough attention in the mainstream media. And my podcast is focused on spirituality, well-being, and creativity. And today's episode is about kink, BDSM, and sensuality with Sophia Rose. I thought this was the perfect topic for this series because despite the fact that sexuality is really repressed in our culture and often very much so in religious communities, sex creates life. So our sexual energy is very linked to our creativity. And of course, healthy sex and healthy relationships can improve our well-being. We recorded this episode on International Women's Day, which was Friday the 8th of March this year. And I thought, what a powerful way to celebrate female-bodied people by talking about pleasure from a female and queer lens. Often the mainstream narratives that were shown about sex through porn, through bad sex education in school, through bad movies, creates unhealthy behaviours, unrealistic expectations on ourselves and others, and can lead to us reinforcing unhealthy social norms around sex. What I love about Sophia is that she brings a really holistic lens to this conversation around sensuality and unpicks some of these unhealthy stereotypes that we've learnt. I met Sophia Rose a few years ago when she hosted a cacao and rope workshop with Dia, who I also interviewed on this series, and it was such a powerful experience for me and a catalyst on my own self-pleasure journey. I also had a one-to-one shibari session with Sophia before I interviewed her, which was amazing, and I speak about my experiences in this episode. Sophia Rose offers private shibari lessons, rope classes, and BDSM education. She has a sex-positive, consent-focused, and trauma-aware approach. And she aims to demystify, queer, and make accessible education on rope, sexuality, and BDSM that embraces and celebrates diverse experiences and perspectives. In this episode, we talk about power dynamics, exploring our own desires, pleasure being collaborative, trauma-informed kink, and she also debunks some myths around sex. This episode features my own unreleased remix of my friend Starseed Soul's track, Don't Ever Let Go, which I've called Alat, which means goddesses in Arabic and is an ode to the pre-Islamic goddesses of the Middle East. And I sing about embracing our sensuality. A full play of this track at the end of this episode, but for now, here are some of my favourite quotes.
So I'm very interested in power, I'm interested in conflict, I'm interested in the ways that we are shaped. I like to explicitly name conflict and power. It's always unconsciously at play, whether we like it or not, whether we want it or not, whether we are choosing or not to participate in or take on certain roles. Liberation for women and queer people, for me, doesn't look like trying to achieve the same power as men. It doesn't look like trying to recreate a patriarchy. Because if you can experience what it feels like to step into your power or to surrender or to communicate really clearly what you desire, to say that you have limits, to express your limits and boundaries, and to do that and embody that, you can take that then into other areas of your life and reap the benefits.
Thank you so much, Sophia, for joining me today. I'm really, really excited that it also happens to be International Women's Day. And I thought, what a perfect time for us to talk about sensuality, kink, consent, female pleasure. Thank you so much. I've been really excited about this.
I'm very excited to be here. And yeah, what a coincidence. And add another layer to thinking about and celebrating and being curious about all these different aspects of our experiences and identity.
Yeah, I was really excited to talk to you. No, not that I want to split things into gender differences, but I did want to think about some things from the female lens and from the queer lens. So it feels really powerful that this day is actually acknowledging female power. And so I'm really excited.
And also excited that I just had my session with you so recently. So I feel more connected to you in that way. And also hoping to talk about that a little bit in the podcast too.
Yeah, I want to hear about more about how it was for you. And we had like a little bit of debrief and check-in directly after and a little bit via message, but it would be great to share that here as well.
I guess like coming to your workshop, having a one-to-one session with you, learning more about your work, I had a curiosity about your connection to rope bondage, kink, sex education, sensuality. How did that kind of like, where did that spark come from?
I think I've always been a very curious and creative person, and also a bit attracted to edginess or to the things that are perhaps a bit vulnerable or intense. I've always been interested or curious about intensity and sexuality. I remember from earliest ages being curious about bodies and sex and love and relationships. And I think people can come into this from different ways. Some people, because perhaps they were very repressed or experienced a lot of shame or a lot of barriers to being able to connect with and express themselves. And I didn't have that experience. I would say I had quite a free, at some points I would say too much freedom or too much enthusiasm and boldness towards exploring myself, which as a teenager, as a young person, sometimes had positive experiences and also had like negative experiences. But I guess through all of that, I continued to have a real curiosity and interest in making sense of my experiences. So I think there's not just a draw towards sexuality and sensuality and relationships to experience them, but actually a real draw towards making sense of. So I'm very interested in power, I'm interested in conflict, I'm interested in the ways that we are shaped. And I think that sexuality is a part of our experience and identity that is shaped by many different things, and on the flip side also shapes many things. Like it's kind of something that's really influenced and also something that influences. And then when I was maybe 18, 19, early 20s, started to explore myself in the kink scene in London. Again, like looking back, thinking, wow, I was really bold and really like brave to go out and do that. And at times I look back and I think, oh, that wasn't necessarily always kind of safest or the most paced ways to go about exploring myself. But I did definitely always have a real drive and almost fearlessness, which again, got me into some good things, got me into some not so good things. So as I've gotten older and as I continue to go along that journey, my boldness perseveres, but my ability to think about kind of consequences and pause before going into things has increased, which is a good thing.
That's really like nice way to sum up your journey. I like that you talked about always having that curiosity, but also that pull towards edginess and intensity. And especially just thinking about like already thinking about gender norms of a woman and the idea of a woman being very like soft and sweet and lovely and such a good girl. And then I like that kind of like powerful woman coming through that wanted to explore that. But also interesting that you mentioned around learning more around safety and kind of consequences as you got older. The thing that really struck me about what you said, that you talked about having a curiosity about power and conflict. And I wondered how that might come up into your work, like as a dominatrix, because I think dynamics around power and conflict, I also find interesting. But I wonder for you, like, what's your perspective on that?
The thing that I find interesting about BDSM, or why I like to explicitly name conflict and power as something that we're consciously playing with, is that actually in our lives, it's always unconsciously at play, whether we like it or not, whether we want it or not, whether we are choosing or not to participate in or take on certain roles. We move through life with these things happening to us. And I guess BDSM and kink invites you to really intentionally connect with more choice and autonomy about the kind of power that you want to play with or express or surrender. And that can be really transformative, that can be really exciting and erotic, that can be really enlightening for people of like, wow, what does it feel like for me to play this role that in my day-to-day life I absolutely am like not connected to at all, or I am, but I'm maybe a bit ashamed of that, about it, or I am, but I've never gotten to express it fully in this way. And also conflict, you know, playing with power dynamics, even like themes of what often can be seen as violence, like bondage, impact play, being moved or held or touched or positioned in ways which can visually look violent or extreme. And again, doing that with choice, with structure, with aftercare, with an understanding of how you want to communicate and why you're interested in doing these things, again, gives you a sense of autonomy and choice and power over things in your day-to-day life you don't have, or you might feel that you don't have. The kind of learning or the experiences from healthy kink and BDSM can really transform other elements of your life, I think. Because if you can experience what it feels like to step into your power or to surrender or to communicate really clearly what you desire, to say that you have limits, to express your limits and boundaries, and to do that and embody that, you can take that then into other areas of your life and reap the benefits.
I love that so much. The minute that you said that power is always at play, and it's something that I was thinking about consciously when I started reading this book, A Woman's Guide to Power Unbound. And I think I mentioned it to you, Sophia. It's this woman that's like that was a really successful dominatrix, but also felt that like where we put our attention is where we put our power. And she talked about like doming and subbing in everyday life. And I found that really interesting. And the idea that a lot of the times women are conditioned to put their attention inwards, whereas men are conditioned to put their attention outwards. And I thought, how powerful that, you know, through healthy exploration of kink, that can actually ripple out into everyday life and relationships. And I think it's definitely something I'm interested in, because you notice like a lot of women feeling like lack of confidence, getting like self-doubt, going inward, not feeling safe enough to express their boundaries. So I think the way that you talk about it makes me really curious about how this can actually help women to kind of like step into their power in a way. When I think about like being a dominatrix or being dominant, I've always fantasized about being dominant against men, but women being dominant with me. And I was kind of curious whether that is because of the current power structures in society where like maybe, well, it's just harder for women in many ways. So it's interesting how that you can sort of play out some of those fantasies in the kink world.
Yeah, and absolutely, I think a lot of people do and perhaps use kink roles, spaces, activities to subvert these power dynamics and subvert these experiences for a sense of reclamation or really like flipping the script. I do, however, it kind of makes me think about like liberation for women and queer people, for me, doesn't look like trying to achieve the same power as men. It doesn't look like trying to recreate a patriarchy, but, you know, a matriarchy or a queer supremacy or something. I think what's really interesting is like dissolving
or like what it would look like to blur or dissolve or make much more fluid gender, sexuality, roles, so that it doesn't necessarily have to be like one against the other or somebody feeling that they have to step into a certain type of power to access power. But it's like, actually, what does power play or surrender or doming or control look like for you and your partner in a way that's really authentic to you and your partner, and not just trying to recreate what you think it should look like, which is often, you know, if you think about the classic femdom dominatrix, it's still very much through a male gaze of, you know, tight clothing, maybe high heels, a whip or something that kind of symbolizes a penis, you know, something that you're going to hit someone with or fuck someone with or hurt someone with. And actually, power and dominance can look many different ways. It can be really nurturing, it can be really creative, it can be really collaborative, it can be really subtle. And I think that can be very liberating to notice all the ways that, like, we might have desires or inclination towards playing with power in certain ways. And none of it is right or wrong, but it can be interesting to notice, like, where did I learn that from? Or, like, what does that symbolize to me? And is that useful? Not, like, is it right or is it wrong, but, like, is that useful for me?
Such a useful reflection to, like, take a step back and actually consider the why. Like you're saying, where is this coming from? Where have I learned this from? Is this a genuine desire for me? Or is this, like, culture kind of influencing me? I thought that was really interesting that you talked about that being a dom might still come through the male lens, but actually unearthing that. What does it feel like for you personally, tapping into our own desires? I think this is the reason why I was so excited to have this episode, really, is the idea of, like, really uniquely tapping into what your desires is as a woman, man, queer, whoever that is. It's not one over the other. And I do think that a lot of the time when people think about kink and BDSM, they might think of an extreme, like, violent version of that. But then what is so curious within that is the softening that happens because of this, like, performative play. So rather than it just being about arousal, actually it can be for release, or actually through this play, it might be a little bit of grief comes up, or there's a softening, or you might notice tears, but actually beneath the tears there's anger. So I think a lot of people just see it as this really erotic arousal, but we are humans having a very rich human experience. So I can imagine for you working in this space, it's not just arousal is the only thing that comes up. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. As you were speaking, it made me think about, like, contrast and juxtaposition is at the heart of often, like, a lot of the enjoyment of this type of play. Like, you're tied up, you experience extreme restriction, but then you also experience, like, being released, or the anticipation of being released, or what it feels like, you know, to, I guess, kind of go through a journey of something that's really intense and really physically perhaps, like, stimulating, and then afterwards a sense of catharsis, or, like, being held or being stroked or feeling, you know, the waves of endorphins that come after a big adrenaline hit. And I think, yeah, there is this juxtaposition of, like, pain, pleasure, restriction, liberation, vulnerability and safety, submission and power, surrendering to actually access, like, a lot of power and strength, and also dominance and vulnerability. Like, to dominate or to hold space for someone is also a very vulnerable act, and can feel really just as perhaps vulnerable or intense on a different facet, but just as much as the person who surrenders. Like, you're also experiencing this sense of stepping into something really different and going into something that is unknown. Even if you plan and you communicate, there is a sense of the unknown. I like what you said about, you know, you might be playing with one thing. There might be arousal, but there might also be grief or sadness, or there might be pain and physical intensity, and with that is also a lot of like tenderness and care and softness. And I guess from pictures, or also like pornography, which doesn't necessarily accurately represent everything, people do miss out on or don't get to see that journey or the kind of flow or the pre and post negotiation and feedback that happens around all of these scenes and types of play that give it those extra layers that make it really interesting.
Yeah, I thought it'd be useful to actually think about my experience as well, because I definitely resonated a lot with what you were saying there. And I think the thing that I loved so much about it was because you held the space so well, I could actually fully be submissive. Whereas if you weren't really grounded and in a dominant space where you were able to really focus your attention on me, then I would have felt a bit frazzled and I wouldn't have been able to let go. But I felt so able to let go. And I think being blindfolded really helps that as well, to like really fully go inward. But it felt really just so nourishing. And I love the subtleties of the experience that I think maybe when you see photos, people see it as like, or people look at kink and they see it as all the extremes, ends of kink. But it was a bit like the way you untied me, or the way the rope whizzed across other parts of my skin, the way that the tension didn't just suddenly drop and suddenly there was no rope, the way that you were actually breathing with me, or we were like kind of like moving together at some points. And it all just felt like so healing, so, so relaxing. And it just made me really appreciate you and the work that you do more. Also, just thinking back, what I really loved is you reminding me that you kind of lose sense of time in that process, and what felt like 20 minutes to me was actually an hour. And I found that really powerful as well. In a world that's constantly overstimulated, with rushing about, rushing to get the train, rushing to go to work, to actually lose sense of time, I thought, I could just do this every month. Like, is that an experience? Like, what I'm saying, is that something that you hear a lot after people have sessions with you?
Definitely the time thing is something that often shocks people. They think that it's been 20 minutes or 10 minutes and it's actually been 45 or an hour. And I guess there is something, especially when you work with a blindfold and you kind of take away the sense of sight, because seeing things is one of the ways that I think we make sense of the passing of time, whether that's changes of light or we see our bodies moving in space and it gives us a sense of that. But when you're not looking, and you're just feeling, yeah, it's kind of this like almost trippy experience of losing yourself completely in a moment and being really present. And especially if you are able to fully surrender to somebody else, there's also this sense of you don't know what's coming next, which really does keep you fully in the moment. You know, you're kind of like really present with what's happening, really enjoying, really noticing like these sensations and the movement and the touch. And I definitely also get this sense of like extreme focus and presence and being brought into my body and being with somebody else's body that I love. And I think there is something really different about experiencing kink and BDSM in a container where it perhaps doesn't go into, should we say, like penetrative sex or like a very like genital stimulation kind of sex. There can be eroticism, there can be sensuality, there can be horniness present, but also allowing yourself to like experience all of that and feel all of that and know that it's not going to progress can also be a very impactful experience for people, I think, to have that space held where you can be erotic. And also, like, fully, like, really fully be erotic and know that there's a boundary around that that's going to be held.
I love so many things of what you said there. Like, I love that you said that you feel a lot of focus and presence, and it feels like what an interesting, like, dance and exchange that it puts you into a space of presence as well as, like, the other person. And also, the idea of going into such a submissive state that you don't know what's going to happen next. And I then, when you said that, I realized why it's so powerful and why it can feel for some people so healing, because we live in a world of so much structured time and this needs to be done at this time and then there's a deadline. And actually, it's like, sometimes I just want to tear it all away. And I've had this real, like, primal feeling. It's like, I just don't want structure anymore. Like, I don't want routine. And so when you said that, I was like, yes, that's why I loved it even more. It's like, no, I don't know what's happening next and I'm not in control of it. And also, when you talked about the idea of kink without penetrative sex, because I think, again, it's like we all just love to fantasize about the extremes and we have to associate it. There's got to be some sort of outcome. And I think even me and myself, I noticed thinking before, like, oh, do you know what? I'm going to be really sexually frustrated and it's just going to be like getting a lap dance and I'm just going to be sitting there like reeling. And actually, I felt just really just melted and soft and nourished. I didn't feel frustrated. The only thing that was frustrating was having to go back, like catch the bus. Yeah, I wanted more, number one, but also yeah, it went too quickly. And then also it's just like going out again and then just going into the busyness. And I was like, oh, I just don't want to face reality yet. And that was actually a little bit tough. I think that it just reminds me of when it comes to sensuality and pleasure, that oftentimes we block ourselves with the fast pace of things or thinking that there needs to be an outcome. Like for a lot of women, feeling like if they don't have an orgasm in sex, then, you know, it's not right. And then that actually stops women having orgasms. Again, it's just that outcome driven focus rather than being present and being with each moment and trusting the process. And I think it kind of like taught me that as well.
And as you said that, it makes me think that like pleasure is collaborative. But especially for people like socialized femme, that you're taught that pleasure is not your right, or that, you know, sex and sexuality is something to be performed, or that it should be done in a certain way, or that it's either there to serve or service, or to perform your own sexuality looking or sounding or moving in a certain way. And actually, I guess like kink and BDSM puts us in these spaces where the roles are quite not defined, but you know, surrender and submission, dominance and control, allowing people to really step more fully into like, you're going to make the decisions and I'm going to follow them. But there's still a lot of collaboration happening there, because actually if one person was totally passive and totally non-reactive, and just said, yeah, you can do whatever you want to me, I think I'd feel very like, well, hold on, I need to know your limits, I need to know what you are curious about, I need to know like what kind of things you might not want to try. I need, like, you know, even with sounds and expressions, it's a collaboration constantly. And pleasure is collaborative. Like, we need to bring a little bit and give a little bit and also receive at the same time. And I think that takes practice when you've been socialized in a way that you're really easily leaning towards, like constantly giving or completely passively receiving, which is very different from like receiving in a way that gives feedback and has limits and expresses boundaries.
So, so powerful, actually. Like, I just want that statement like printed somewhere, like pleasure is collaborative, because I think people need to just stop and really soak that in, because I don't think that's the way men and women, I think we've all been screwed over actually by the system. The more, you know, the more I talk about gender, I'm actually like, you know what, we've all been screwed and, you know, we've all been impacted in our own ways. But it's so true, it is collaborative. And yet, like, I've spoken to so many girls that have been like, oh, I kind of like fake the orgasm, or I kind of like had to exaggerate to make them feel better, and kind of like losing ourselves in that moment, because we're not coming from the place that pleasure is a give and take. It's collaborative. It requires us to actually really tune in to our own felt sense rather than go into like people pleasing mode and feel like they've got to accommodate for the other person. Also, the way that you were talking, it made me laugh. Like, you know, if someone was just like, do whatever you want to me, which I can imagine.
If someone says that to me, I said, well, can I shave your eyebrows off?
Yeah.
No, it's like, of course you can't do whatever you want to someone, you know?
that's not really helpful if pleasure is collaborative, and that's not really helpful guidance. And it kind of then neatly brings me on to wanting to explore trauma-informed kink, because if pleasure is collaborative and we need to actually know what people's boundaries are, how do you bring a trauma-informed lens to your work?
The word trauma-informed can get bandied around a lot. And I think it's helpful to remember that that language and the framework of like working in a trauma-informed way comes from healthcare, actually. In working with people who've experienced like trauma in mental health services and how to support people in ways that doesn't actively re-traumatize them. However, like working in a trauma-informed way, I really want to highlight that it's not about curing, it's not about healing, it's not about trying to analyze or work with someone's trauma. It's something that you can do for everyone. You don't need to know anything about somebody's history or background to work in a trauma-informed way. And actually working in a trauma-informed way starts with like how you work with yourself. Checking in, noticing where you are, what you really have capacity for. It's about giving yourself enough time to make decisions and do the thing that you want to do in the way that you want to do it. It's about doing things collaboratively. Like with each other rather than to one another. And I guess in BDSM, there's a lot of possibility for collaborating on how you communicate, the kind of play you want to do, the kind of aftercare you want to do, your fantasies, your desires, lots of space for collaboration and communication. And it's also about like recognizing that the more you know about yourself, or the more aware you are, shall we say, of perhaps parts of your experience or things that like live in your body that can show up, that actually you have to take responsibility for that. Like, I am not responsible, actually, for other people triggering me. Things can happen in the world, and of course, if somebody is intentionally trying to violate my consent or harm me, then yes, that person is responsible at that point. But if I'm somebody living with an experience of trauma or things that I need more time to integrate and process, I need to start by being responsible in understanding like what do I need to feel safer? What do I need to be able to communicate? What do I need to be able to ground myself if something isn't going so well? And I think that's really helpful to name, because often when people hear trauma-informed, they can think of it as like somebody else being responsible for their trauma, or somebody else being responsible for managing a reaction. And actually, again, it starts with ourselves and then it's collaborative. So in a BDSM context, it's also about recognizing that trauma happens in experiences in which our systems, our bodies are overwhelmed and cannot integrate the experience. That's when you start to get symptoms of trauma, is when your body has not been able to integrate an experience fully, so it keeps coming up for you. And those experiences often happen in the context of a power imbalance, like you felt overwhelmed, you felt overpowered, or somebody used a position of power, either physically or, you know, in a dynamic to, like, something happened to you in the context of a power dynamic. BDSM and kink intentionally plays with power dynamics and control and roles. So to expect that things are not going to come up can be naive, because trauma happens in this context and then we're choosing to go into it, whether that's like, you know, institutional power, intergenerational, historical trauma, relational trauma that might have happened like in your family or in a previous like romantic relationship, it's likely to come up. So that's why I think the number one thing when it comes to being trauma-informed is starting with yourself and being like, what are maybe some of my
like shadow motivations for doing these things. Like maybe I'm really attracted to XYZ. Like, are there other things that could show up as I'm playing with this kink or in this role? And again, it's not about right or wrong or do or don't do it, but by having that awareness, you can go like intentionally and with a bit more care towards things that might be a bit still raw or new, rather than going headfirst towards it and potentially recreating or perpetuating something that you feel that you don't have a choice in.
You just articulated that so well, and it's like really powerful, and I think it's like a message that a lot of people need to hear. And what was coming to me when you were talking, and I think where like trauma cannot be healed, is when we're living from a place of expectation of, you know, for both men, women, queer, gender diverse, that we feel that we need to act this way and this is the expectation on us. And then that blocks us from going inward. And I think even thinking about men and the fact that the idea that it's not manly to cry or be in touch with your emotions and sensitivities, and a woman is expected sometimes to be here for a man's entertainment, and all of these expectations blocking us from connecting to how we actually feel. I think what a beautiful message is actually what you said, is encouraging people to go inward. And that's part of the trauma-informed lens, that we take responsibility for our emotions, for our past experiences, and to know that, yeah, I love that message, that when we're triggered, it's not necessarily their responsibility. It's triggered some sort of past experience that's happened to us, and we need to become aware of that pattern that's being triggered. By coming from this trauma-informed lens, we're actually bringing more awareness to that. We're not blocking it. We're not repressing it. We're just creating that spaciousness. That's the kind of message I got from you. It's that spaciousness for things to come through in a very open and honest way. It kind of like reminds me of what you were saying when I was listening to one of your videos on your Insta profile, and I just loved like one of the quotes that you said, how you recognize the impact of power and privilege between individuals and spaces. And I would love to hear a little bit more from you about that.
I'm going to answer that question, and then I also wanted to come back to something that you said before, so I'm going to try and remind myself. I think, again, you have to notice your own conditioning and your own, like, what you bring before you can be relational with others. Like, noticing or being aware of the intersections of your identity and how that can afford you, like, privileges, but also, like, barriers in spaces. But also, if you even want to think about, like, pleasure and access to pleasure, access to power, access to your body. And that's why this idea of like kink and power or submission as like really noticing if it is it a choice? Like a friend of mine, Caritia, who's an artist and educator and facilitator based in Berlin, was talking about it's a privilege to actually play with submission. It's a privilege to choose to submit, because actually many people don't have that freedom or that safety. Like, you know, a person of color walking into a kink space that is like very white dominated may not feel, or understandably may not feel or would not feel safe to maybe let go and be really vulnerable and bare themselves like physically and emotionally in a space where they might not feel that people like really respect or understand their experiences or won't fetishize them. Similarly, you know, I often have the idea of like, if you're a man who's coming into the kink scene, like a cis-heterosexual man, and your desire is that you want to like be violent or like fuck and hit and spit on and degrade women, notice like where that comes from. Like, is that really radical? Is that some kind of radical liberatory thing? Desire is amoral. You can't police people's desires. Many people have fantasies about consensual non-consent or violence. There's nothing wrong in your desire. But it's like, how do you then go about exploring that? Like, Do you feel entitled to those things? Or are you willing to build relationships with people where you express, yeah, like, I have these desires that are actually quite strong, and I want to do them in a way that actually still, like, feels really consensual and well communicated and thought out, so that I'm actually not just expressing my violent fantasies onto someone and recreating cycles of harm that, you know, great. I think that's something that I often think about, is not shaming anybody, because people absolutely, like, get off on what you want to get off on, but it's how you then choose to express that and do that with people that makes the difference of, like, are you really aware of the privilege and the power that you hold and how you move through the world with it?
Yeah, again, like, really, really important messaging around, like, noticing our conditioning. And I think that goes for everyone, actually. I think there's different levels of privilege that we all experience, as well as the fact there's so many different intersections of our identity. So I think we all actually need to take a step back. And of course, I really loved as well that you said, like, you know, we're not policing people's desires, because that's something that I wanted to come on to next. And I think that can be dangerous in of itself. But we can actually allow desires to be expressed safely when we have a little check-in with ourselves. Again, it's like coming inward and putting the mirror up into ourselves and going, okay, where's this coming from? Just keep asking why, and checking it's consensual, checking it's well communicated. And I thought, again, like, really powerful that you said it's a privilege, or that your friend had mentioned it's a privilege to choose to submit, and that not everyone has that privilege. I just think it's really interesting bringing this level of awareness into a conversation, because, again, I think people would imagine, you know, two people talking about sensuality and kink, that it's all about fetish and fantasy. But actually, we're still human beings, and there still needs to be awareness with things as well, rather than just seeing the extremes of it. So, yeah, really grateful that you brought that up. And I just guess I wanted to check in, because you said that there was something that I mentioned, but maybe...
No, there is. There's one more thing that I was thinking is, I think sometimes people can see it as opposite ends of the spectrum, like sexy, fun, kinky stuff on this side, and like emotional, reflective, I don't know, just like self-reflection and the communication and the kind of deeper stuff on the other side. And it's not, like, they're actually much closer. They enhance one another. And I think because there are so many layers, and understandably, like, pain, shame, bad experiences, all of these layers attached to our sexuality, there can be resistance to, like, I don't want this thing that is supposed to be fun and kinky and sexy to become this, like, thing I have to think about and work through and, like, talk about, like, because also the myth that we get sold is that sex, you know, you just burst into your lover's arms and there's this chemistry and you start having the most fantastic, like, mind-blowing sex and everything's wonderful. And the reality is it's just not like that. Like, actually really hot, like, pleasurable, kinky fun, for me at least, and, you know, everybody's different, has come out of, like, relationships and dynamics where we've taken also the time to, like, really know each other. And that doesn't have to look like a, you know, long-term monogamous relationship, but, like, really care about the other person and see that the other person also cares about themselves and is, like, thinking about their own experience. There's a lot more to this than just, like, learning how to, you know, throw a flogger and, like, tie some rope. Like, it is actually building your communication skills, building your skills for, like, resilience around conflict or when things go wrong. Getting really comfortable with, like, saying no and expressing a boundary, even if that feels hard and that feels like it's loaded. Those are the things that I think really increase the possibility of, like, hot, wonderful experiences. And to go back to what I wanted to say was, sometimes I think the language around describing kink as healing, that's a very personal way for somebody to describe something that they've experienced. And if that's their experience, that's really positive. If there's any kind of kink practitioner or somebody doing rope or somebody who is claiming to be able to heal people, I think that's where I like to make the distinction I think it's a bit of a red flag. But kink can be therapeutic, kink can be transformative, people can experience kink as healing, understandably, because it's liberating, it can release them of lots of shame, it can bring them into deeply powerful relationships and get them in touch with parts of themselves that they didn't connect to previously. But if somebody else is saying, I can do that, or I can heal trauma, or I can do that for you, that's when I would say, careful.
Red flag.
Red flag, yeah.
Totally, because it reminds me of the kind of creepy issues of even shamans coming, I can come and heal you. And even when we know that healing is a very self journey, you're not being healed. It is taking advantage, especially if you're not coming from a healed place yourself, to say that you're going to start unblocking people's chakras and doing all of this. It's just, it's too much for me.
That's the key word that you said, is taking advantage. That when people are in spaces where they're vulnerable, and kink and BDSM is one of them, it brings you into a really vulnerable space, that vulnerability requires real care and respect and boundaries. And I think often when people are vulnerable, they want to lean towards things that feel clear and safe. And so somebody's saying, I'm going to take you on this vulnerable experience and heal you, or, whether it's kink or spiritual world, you're going to go through something really dark, you're going to go through something really intense, and I'm fully responsible for facilitating that for you. That can be very attractive to people, because they think, great, you're fully taking care of everything, you're responsible, you're leading all of this. Whereas actually, a realistic approach would be, I'm here, I might be guiding this, but actually, at all times, I'm wanting to bring you into your sense of choice. I want you to stay connected to your needs. I want us both to stay connected to our boundaries. I want us both to be as connected to each other as we are to ourselves at every moment. And as soon as somebody, one person, is claiming full responsibility for another in any sense, you can get into murky waters. So I think that goes for kink and in spiritual circles as well.
Really beautiful way to articulate that. It's I'm going to help you get into your sense of choice. I'm not doing to you. Let's make a space where we can be as connected to each other as possible. And I think, you've talked about that curiosity around power and conflict. And I'm also understanding that in a space where vulnerability is going to come out, there needs to be some sort of balance of feeling that connection first. I think that's something that I felt actually during our session, that it wasn't just quickly, let's get into this. There was a slowness, there was a tea, let's do some breath work, to allow that space of connection where I can then really enjoy the experience. But I can imagine if it was rushed and there wasn't that sense of opening or closing, then I wouldn't have felt as connected to you, and then I wouldn't have been able to let go and enjoy myself as much. And I also thought it really stood out to me that when you were talking about there's no separation between kink and emotions, and we kind of sometimes see kink is the extreme hot side over there and then emotional aftercare is over there, and actually there is no separation. So let's just start normalizing talking about emotional care and kink together rather than some sort of separate tick box. And also sort of rewriting that narrative that, sex is immediately fiery and passionate and it's just so lustful and amazing. And actually there is a working towards that in kink and sensuality of really taking time to get to know yourself, your needs, the other person's needs. I'm just really grateful that you're kind of using this space and this platform to just sort of break down some of these myths and misconceptions around kink, so that we can actually really connect to our sensuality in a healthy way. And then it's even more pleasurable,
And also allowing, for there to be some awkwardness, hesitancy. I think having hesitancy present doesn't mean that it's a no. It just might mean that it's a yes, but under these conditions. Or it's new, so how am I going to know if I'm going to like this for the first, how do you know if you like something before you've tried it? all of these things with kink, BDSM, sexuality, like, let yourself feel the awkwardness, let yourself feel some of that hesitancy. And I think the myth that consent should be like fully enthusiastic is really limiting to a lot of people for different reasons. Like, if you're somebody with a history of trauma, if you're doing something for the first time, if you're neurodivergent, letting everything be present, that it doesn't have to be super like passionate chemistry all the time. Like, it might be awkward. You might have to stop halfway through and like have a pause and have some water or shift your position. Like, I think during our session, there was one point where you were like, you know, oh, actually, my leg's going numb now, like, and I need to go for a wee. Like, I'm going to go for a wee. And that's really good. And that's a positive thing, because when you can bring yourself more fully, you build trust. Like, when somebody can say to me, oh, you know, actually, I need to stop for a sec because I need a wee, that makes me have a sense of like, oh, yeah, this person's going to let me know if they need something. I'm really grateful for that. Rather than both people feeling that they somehow have to, I don't know, go through this kind of serious or fully seamless experience without stopping or changing something or moving or having a giggle, laughing. Yeah, being playful, being human, basically.
It's nice to just kind of like debunk some of like the idealized versions of how this might go. And actually, I guess it's like, if you're in a position of dominance, then it's easier for you to be dominant and have your attention on someone when you know that they're going to check in with you and be able to articulate what their needs and boundaries are. So I think let's just make that sexy. You know, it's sexy to actually know your boundaries and to be aware of consent, rather than I'm just going to people please and let them do whatever they want to me and that will be easier. And it's like, that's not really a healthy way to connect to our sensuality. And I like that kind of message around awkwardness, hesitancy, maybe pausing for a moment, going for a wee, getting a drink of water, like humanizing this process as well can actually help people to connect in a deeper way.
I think I want to just say that the first time people do that, like, I know I was having, you know, lots of sex for a really long time without great communication. When I really started to communicate around my needs and desires and sex, it was hard. Like, it felt hard. It felt awkward. It felt unnatural to me, because actually what was more familiar to me was to bypass my own feelings and dissociate a little bit and just kind of go along with it, or be like, yeah, some of this is fun, some of it's not, but I can kind of let that slide to get the bits of it that I do like. Whereas it takes real practice to be like, actually, like, this isn't working for me, or can we try it like this, or I need to stop now, I'm actually not feeling this, or I really love that, can we do it more? Because if you're used to just kind of going with the flow or letting somebody else make the choices, it feels really strange when you start speaking up and stepping in and expressing your boundaries. The first time it's going to feel a bit like, oh, this is sticky, this is awkward. But the more you do it, the easier it becomes. So don't give up also. If you're trying things and it feels a bit awkward or a bit sticky or a bit uncertain or unfamiliar, it probably means that you're getting somewhere really good.
Yeah, that's such a good message, actually. It's actually in the discomfort is where the growth is. And I definitely resonate on a personal level about actually being able to articulate needs or desires and it coming out in this clunky way where I'm probably giving mixed messages because it doesn't really feel that natural. But actually that it does take practice, again, like humanizing this process rather than just presuming that we know it all and we're all just super well practiced at this. It's okay to take time and it's okay for it to be a little bit awkward at first, but that to persevere with that and then it will start hopefully to get more comfortable. Talking to you, I've kind of, it's gone from a black and white binary lens to more fluidity. And actually, no, it's collaboration. It's a dance. It's back and forth. You have to repeat. You might change, you know, in the same way with consent, a yes might change into a no. And that needs to be something that's discussed. It's not always a yes. So I really appreciate and value you bringing this perspective.
And maybe that's kind of the biggest takeaway from these conversations in general, is
no matter how long you do it or how much you do it. Humans are the most variable thing, especially then you add layer, like, you know, sexuality. It's so layered and it's so fluid and it's so dependent on all of these other things going on in our life and our day and ourselves at any one time, that there is no guarantee that you're ever going to get it fully right or know 100%. So I feel like I'm constantly gathering like tools and information and more layers of understanding and more resilience, like building myself up to be more and more resilient to be able to then hold what's coming up and what's happening, not to be perfect or be accurate or get everything right all the time. We're going to keep on doing it for the whole rest of our lives. We might as well enjoy it as well and kind of make it fun and be gentle on ourselves as we go through it all.
When we're talking today, I feel like you're bringing like such a holistic and human lens to it, whereas I think some people might go on your profile and be like, oh my God, it's like this the whole time. And actually knowing that, no, there's actually a lot of learning, that you're building resilience over time, that you yourself are on a journey, that you're gathering your tools. So I think, yeah, just so happy we're having this chat. It's been so nourishing to speak to you. And I'm so happy this actually has been on International Women's Day, because I think you're actually a really remarkable woman to showcase. And I have so much respect for you, honestly, and just really, really grateful for this opportunity. So thanking you.
It was great. It was great to get really in depth about certain topics and speak to the nuance of all of these different things and the kind of intensity and sensitivity at the same time. And yeah, it's really great to talk with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. I hope you got a lot out of that episode and learned more about BDSM and kink from a holistic, compassionate and trauma-informed lens. To learn more about Sophia's work or to book a one-to-one session or a workshop, you can follow her on Instagram and find out more on her website. I've left links in the description. For more content from me, follow my Instagram, dunya.rising_podcast. And now I'm really excited to play you a first release of my remix of Starseed Soul's track Don't Ever Let Go, which I've called Alat. Thanks for listening.
speed. You're a slut or against God if you have your own ideas. In a world full of binaries, we break the convention. I'm not seeking your approval or justification. We used to worship the great goddesses of sex and pleasure, but now our women are made to believe they have no power. They shun us and they shame us.